Hello, Royals fans. Welcome to the podcast Inside Athletics. I'm Dave King, the Director of Athletics at Eastern Mennonite University, and want to welcome you to this week's podcast. I'm joined once again today by James DeBoer, and we have made it all the way across from the University Commons to Lehman Auditorium for recording our podcast today.
We have all our ears and all our fingers left.
We still have our ears and fingers. I will say it was a tad nippy when I went for my jog this morning, with the wind blowing a little bit. Hopefully all of you are staying warm, but I know, and if you're listening to this, you're probably in the depth of cold as well, except for a few of you in the Southwest. We'd like to recap what's been going on here the last week with our athletic teams, and I will give a little update on the NCAA convention, which I attended last week. Needless to say, it was in San Diego, and I did get back before the storms of the snow and the cold came, and I must admit that it was a good place to be. In fact, I could have even, some of us were talking about staying out for golf tournament that's going on out there at Torrey Pines, just up the road from where we were staying in San Diego. So I'll give an update on that with a couple of the seminars that I was able to attend and some of the decision-making that Division III had. But let's first of all recap things with James. Give us a little idea of what's been going on. A couple of big games. I happen to miss what some people call the biggest game of the year anytime you're playing your rival down the road in Bridgewater. And the night we played Bridgewater and men, I was somewhere else, so we can go all the way back to that one if you'd want. Women just played him. Give us a little update of what's been happening.
Sure. It's been an exciting stretch for both of our basketball teams. Both teams coming in on three-game winning streaks right now, coming into this weekend. Big matchups this weekend. We'll talk about that in a second as well. But both teams very exciting. Let's start with the women. We talked a little bit about what they did last week with a big win at Virginia Wesleyan, a huge win, actually, point differential-wise, I think it was a 19-point victory. Played at home last Saturday against Hollins. And partially, you look at that, I think it was about a 10-point win. On one hand, you want to say, well, it's only Hollins. How'd you only win by 10? And albeit we didn't play our best on Saturday, but I think what you're seeing on the women's side is just an overall competitive balance coming into play. In the last few years, there's been some good teams, some decent teams, and a couple of teams fighting at the bottom. And it seems like those bottom teams are progressively getting better on the women's side in basketball. And Hollins is one of those teams, even though they graduated Jasmine Green last year, who's one of the best players in the conference last year, as a team, they're almost more balanced this year. And so they gave our women headaches here Saturday, and the women actually played well down the stretch and pulled out a win in that one. So it'll be interesting to watch the competitive balance go on the women's side.
Well, there's no doubt about it. I mean, I think that's parity, whatever terms you want to call it. But we go down to Wesleyan, and they're undefeated in league play, and you got other people knocking each other off. I think the top four or five spots are pretty well wide open, and then there might be a little bit of a gap. But we went down to Roanoke and lose to them, and Roanoke turns around and beats somebody else and now – It'll be very interesting as we come down the stretch.
Yeah, so the women played great. They went down to Bridgewater this past Wednesday, the rivalry game on the road this time for the women, and a very, very interesting contest. Our women played a lot better than they did Saturday and struggled the entire game. Bridgewater was hitting everything, it seemed like. They ended up shooting 50% from outside, the Eagles did. But our women, despite trailing with about 6.5 minutes left, they had a little spell there where they held Bridgewater scoreless for a couple of minutes, went on a little run, and just took control at just the right time. And that's part of the fun of watching our team. You see them take control at key points near the end of the game. Part of that, I think, is just experience and leadership from the upperclassmen who have been here for a couple of years and started for a couple of years. And part of it also is just the way we play basketball. The women very up-tempo, very aggressive, and on Wednesday night they were just pushing the ball as much as they could, and Bridgewater kept with them for a while, but I think the tempo wears down on other teams faster than it does on our team. So I think that was part of it as well, as we just wore out the Eagles and got an impressive 10-point win on the road.
Well, I think it's also, I reflect back to one of the men's teams that we had, the one that went to the Elite Eight. It was a different player every time. So I think with the women, I think even Coach Griffin would admit he's never quite sure how it's going to happen. It happens. It has been happening for us where they – you know, get the key buckets and get the key stops when they need to. But one of the advantages, you never know who it's going to be to. So, like last year, Hollins had Jasmine Green. You knew she was going to get the ball at the end. You knew it was going to happen.
Right.
you don't know how it's going to happen here, whether it be the fast break points, whether it be Shaq underneath, whether it be outside shooting, whatever it would happen to be. And that puts you a little bit on edge because you don't know whether you're going to come through or not. So far, somebody always has, which I think makes it also difficult to defend us and to know what's going to happen. So the confidence is building that it can happen with each game, but we don't know where it's coming from, so that's a little bit of the uncertainty.
Mm-hmm. Well, confidence is also building over on the men's side as the Runnin' Royals also on a three-game winning streak. They started that with a solid win over Bridgewater at home last week, but now they've picked up two straight road wins, which is that's key for the ODAC. You want to protect your home court and just try to pick up a couple of wins on the road, and our men did that twice now, Saturday and Wednesday. They've picked up wins. Both of them pretty solid victories. They won at Washington and Lee Wednesday, kind of a back-and-forth game. The Generals have a lot of height that presents problems for a lot of teams, and the Royals found a way to just pull away at the end, and Marcel Krump with a couple of huge steals in the last minute to help seal a six-point win on the road. So a lot of fun to watch the men picking up some steam as well. They're now 9-7, a couple games over 500, the longest winning streak of the season for them. And they've actually done it without one of their regular starters, Ryan Yates, out for a few games with an injury. And it's been impressive to see Woody Furbush step up into the starting lineup. And you know, he's not scoring 30 points a game. He's just doing competent things on the floor. And he hit a couple of three-pointers Wednesday nights and had a bunch of rebounds the game before. And so it's just fun to watch people step up. So the men's team, not a deep team, but they're kind of, I think they're building the experience, because most of their bench right now, their second unit, is a lot of freshmen. And so they're building a lot of game experience, which is only going to help them when they hit tournament time down the road. But, you know, a solid win for the men, three-game winning streak. And now both teams coming home this weekend. It's a huge day for EMU. We're basically going to be in Yoder Arena all day long on Saturday.
Exactly right.
But the interesting part is they're very important games for both men's and women's basketball, as both of them host Guilford. Guilford always an impressive program, and this year no different, as both the men's and women's teams amongst the conference leaders on their respective sides. So that should be a very interesting day. The women play at 2, the men will play at 4. I'm just really excited. I could go about 20 different angles with this, but it should be a really fun day Saturday. Besides the basketball games at 2 and 4, men's volleyball team also opening up their regular season. They had the alumni match last Saturday, which was a ton of fun. To watch a bunch of our new faces play a bunch of faces we're familiar with that are now alumni.
Right.
But the volleyball men have 5 new starters. They only returned 5 players, and only 2 of them were starters last year. And so they'll open up on Saturday against Coker, a Division II school that is making the drive. And they said, hey, we'll come up if we can play 2 games. So we're playing them twice, 11 o'clock in the morning and 7 o'clock at night, kind of bookending the 2 basketball games on Saturday.
Yeah, we were really glad that they were able to do that, because the original plan was for them to play us on Saturday and go up to Mary Washington, or Marymount. I think, at Marymount on Sunday, and they were not able to do that, and they weren't allowed to travel unless they could pick up 2 games, and they said, well, we'll play you twice. The only problem was, do you do one Friday night and Saturday, or do you hang around for Saturday night? They were planning to stay on a Saturday night anyway, so we had to put the 2 games in between, so they're willing to stick around till 7 o'clock and play that one as well. So you're right, we'll be there morning till night in Yoder Arena. I think 2 weeks from now there's no home game, so I'm just looking
forward
to
that
as well. But if you're in the area, certainly you're able to do it. The men's, women's and men's games will be handled as one. We won't clear the gym in between, because we just assume that there'll be some overlap on there, and so the ticket tables will be open all the way through the women's game and into the first half of the men's game. But you can take in, there's no admission charge for the volleyball matches at 11 and 7.
It's gonna be a really exciting weekend. I'm excited for those games. Our track team also on the road, as they head out to Newport News this weekend. I think they were just loading up the buses as we came over here to record the podcast. So exciting to see them get some more action, some different competition. We've seen 2 school records fall already in just 2 meets this year. So it'll be exciting also just to see what our track teams can do as they build up steam. I think they're still nursing a couple of injuries. Probably not at full speed or full roster size, maybe this weekend. But definitely fun to see what the track teams can do.
Yeah, no, they are getting back into action. They took off some rust a little bit of last weekend's, and now they're ready to go here. A group going down tonight to the match and to the meet, and then some on Saturday as well. It is going to be hard to cover them because we are getting nearly every event covered now in terms of having a participant in each one. And it's typical of the pattern of growth of a track and field team, as I've talked to Coach Lukowitz, is it really does, the growth of the team really begins with the middle distance runners, and that's because you bring your cross-country runners over to do the middle distance. Assistant Coach Britt Noller is doing a great job, though, of getting the runners, the sprinters and the hurdlers in, a few high jumpers, as we'll talk about. I'm sure Jordan King's looking forward to another a good year, along with Drew Vrolik as well. But all of them are starting, we have participants in almost every event now, so we will have a lot to cover as they come back from there, and hopefully we can give the a good recognition to everybody and not just the ones who break some kind of a record. So, well, that's the update. If you're, again, if you're in town on this weekend, a warm place to be will be Yoder Arena. So we hope to see you there. Let me just give you a couple of comments or thoughts on the NCAA convention. My time was shortened out there as I had some obligations here on Sunday, so I had to fly back on Saturday. And the convention consists of Wednesday and Thursday being educational sessions that you can go to, some of them designated for Division III, some across the board. And then Friday is a Division III issues forum at which we sit around tables and discuss the main topics that are there. This was on the recruiting thing that I covered a couple of weeks ago. We continued on that. Friday afternoon, the conferences have their own meetings, so ODAC had a meeting as well. And then Saturday morning is actually the business meeting when the voting takes place on the 10 resolutions or legislation that was in front of them. I was unable to stay for that, so I cast my votes and gave them to Brad Banks and Commissioner of the ODAC, and I think he actually ended up by the end of probably voting for about five or six different schools, because from the West Coast, unless you can get a red-eye flight, you're headed out of there earlier in the morning or at least by noon or 1 o'clock, so I think some people left. So there was no controversial legislation. The only one that raised some question was about allowing football helmets to be used in the spring practice sessions, and they withdrew that one because it was controversial in the sense that football does not have the regular, similar, non-traditional season that soccer or field hockey would have or volleyball would have. They are allowed spring practices, but it's always been without pads. 2 years ago, we voted to allow them to use hand shields. Now this year they wanted to put helmets. Everybody knows where this is going, and they would like to have a regular contact session in the spring. And it has been so far been only two walkthroughs, plays, that kind of thing like that without hitting, and then, of course, strength and conditioning. So that one was withdrawn. The rest of them flew by very quickly, and none of them were really that important to the way we operate and what we're doing here. So I want to talk just briefly about two sessions I went to. I was not able to be there Wednesday. I got there on Thursday. Went to two very interesting sessions. The first one was, if I can remember the exact title, was LGBTQ and Religion, Trying to Find a Common Ground on Sports. It was a fascinating discussion that began when there was a professor from University of Massachusetts Amherst who was representing the inclusion efforts for gays and lesbians within the sporting realm, and she was attending a conference of women's basketball coaches, I believe, and she had her display there, and about two or three displays down was the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. And she knew that they were sort of on opposite poles when it came to gay and lesbian rights issues. And so she said, I didn't want to talk with them. She said, I get high blood pressure when I walk by their display, and I was looking at their materials for hate language, et cetera. Long story short, she did finally get up the courage to stop and engage conversation. Those two people ended up having breakfast the next morning, began to realize how much they had at least in common and how they're representing their positions, and began to understand, hey, maybe the common ground for us in this is in athletics. So the bulk of it was actually discussions around the tables, which again frightened some people, but it was interesting to sit there and hear the variety of opinions that there were and variety of types of schools that were represented. It was also simply fascinating to know that this secular agency, whatever organization of the NCAA was sponsoring something like this. It was obvious that the people who shared their testimony at the beginning, before we went into discussions, three of them were gay former athletes who talked about their religious affiliations and how that was a real detriment to their being able to come out and live their life. And now they've rekindled their relationships with their church and with that sort of thing. So it clearly had that tone of saying, okay, how do religions respond to this? Where's the spiritual part of this coming in? And I mean, you can't do anything with this topic in an hour, but it was right. Just fascinating to be sitting there and realizing that this NCAA was sponsoring some type of a conversation that was going on about this. And as most of you who are listening probably know, EMU is in the midst of a listening process that the Board of Trustees has asked. And again, I emphasize very carefully that this is a listening process. People think a decision has been made on this, and it hasn't been made. The decision was that we were to do a listening process to take the feedback back to the Board of Trustees for them to determine whether or not there should be any change in the hiring policy as it relates to gay and lesbian people who would be in same-sex relationships. So we are in the midst of that. It was just totally fascinating to walk in and see, oh, here the NCAA is going to talk about it. So it was just engaging. We had the whole variety of schools, which I won't identify because it sounds like I'm putting them in boxes as to where they would be on it. But they were very open about what their position was on it. And so they are going to develop a think tank out of that. So it was interesting. It was timely for us to begin the process of thinking here as well. And I had to think a lot about, yeah, right now the EMU is working on the position of their hiring policies. So it, in a sense, it doesn't really impact our student athletes and what we're doing with our student athletes here. And the questions have been raised quite a bit, about how that fits in here. And, you know, many schools have a don't ask, don't tell type of sort of operandi the way they go about that. I talked to one AD who said, you know, my comments to the coaches have always been, you know, if they're the quarterback and they're throwing the last pass in the last second of the game, or they're shooting the one-on-one with no time left on the clock, does it really matter what orientation they are? I mean, how does that play into what you're trying to do with them as a team? So we did that. The second one I went to was on the Affordable Care Act and its impact on Division II and III athletics. And I must say that I haven't spent a lot of time trying to understand the Affordable Care Act. And after he's finished, now I know why I don't spend a lot of time trying to figure it out. He put his first screen that he went up on there was sort of almost like an organizational chart. And I kid you not, there were probably 150 little boxes that had lines directed to here and there and the other thing. And so he wanted to show us how complicated this was. The way the Affordable Care Act has been impacting us has been with our part-time employees, which almost all schools have as assistant coaches being part-time or graduate assistants. For on the faculty side, it's adjunct faculty. And how is this impacting them? And the impact is that anyone over 30 hours has to be given benefits. So trying to make sure everyone has health care is what it amounts to. And so it was very much eye-opening. It was an attorney, or at least someone that works with an investment firm out of Indianapolis, who works a lot with schools on this issue. So it was very informative. I feel good about where our HR people are here at EMU, but it was very interesting. And I will say that as I sat and talked about people among that were around me, there were five of us. There were five interpretations of the Affordable Care Act and how great. You might do it in terms of that. So that was very helpful. It was very engaging. I really appreciated that one. It at least got me started, and now I have feel like I'm better able to have communication, knowledgeable with the HR people as we work through it. But we are being hit with that with our part-time employees. Because when you start to look at a graduate assistant or assistant coach, if they're limited to 30 hours, you go on a weekend road trip because you have to count travel time. This is the one everybody disagreed on. Do you count travel time or not? we have decided that we will count travel time, but not overnight sleeping time. We would say at that point, the head coach is the one who's ultimately responsible. But when you're traveling, you assume as an assistant coach some responsibility. It's called team activity. You have to count all that. So if you count two away trips on 1 week, on a Wednesday and a Saturday, and then you want to go recruiting on Sunday or Monday, guess what? You're well over your hours, not a load practice. So that was helpful for us to at least navigate our way through. Well, we've probably taken more than our share of your time today with the podcast, although I have listened to the podcast at the ODAC, and I think they're almost 30 or 35 minutes long. So we're doing pretty good to try to keep this to 15 or 20, whatever it is. Thanks for joining us this week. I hope you'll stay tuned with what's happening as James continues to write the articles, shows the photos that are up there. Looking forward to getting into the heart of the ODAC basketball season. And then, of course, the men's volleyball kicking off and the track and field continuing. And needless to say, baseball and softball are starting to practice. And we're only about a month away or 3 weeks away from opening baseball game, which is really hard to believe. Thanks for joining us this week. And until we talk to you again, make it a great week.